Bring out the talent.
Bring out the talent.
Bring out the talent.
Welcome to Bring Out the Talent, a podcast featuring learning and development experts discussing innovative approaches and industry insights. Tune in to hear our talent help develop yours. Now here are your hosts, TTA's CEO and President Maria Melfa and Talent Manager Jocelyn Allen.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. This is Maria.
Hi, it's Jocelyn. We're back for another episode. This one should be a really fun one, Maria. I'm excited about it.
We're so excited to have two of our TTA employees join us today that run our direct hire division, Brian Dick and Steve Milne. And they will be talking about the benefits and challenges of talent acquisition. According to the latest data from the Labor Department, there are over 11 million job openings in total. In addition to the slow return to work, millions of Americans have also retired early in the last 2 years. With the ever-present need for employees, what options do organizations have when it comes to talent acquisition? Today, to help us dive into recruiting and talent acquisition, welcome Brian and Steve.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
What a team. I love having everybody on site today to talk about our direct hire division. You guys work magic together. I know you guys have been working together for a long time. So we wanted to put a little different spin on learning and development today by talking about what you guys know about the climate right now and how direct hire can help organizations fill the gaps that they have, that so many of them have with the current culture of things. Steve, can you tell us how talent acquisition has changed over the last 10 years or so?
Sure. And there's really a lot of answers that can go into this, probably its own 30-minute segment. But in previous years, we're talking before LinkedIn, before smartphones, talent acquisition consisted of finding a vacancy, putting out a job advertisement, farming candidates, screening them, and negotiating an offer. Almost seems like an easy process, right? The biggest change with how talent acquisition has been handled over the last decade is really technology. Backing up even further to 2 decades ago, people were using landline phones, home numbers, newspapers, and faxes to locate talent. Now we're supplied with cell phones that are essentially a computer, instant messaging, LinkedIn, which has different platforms built within that. Sales has Sales Navigator, recruiting, premium, et cetera, and other forms of social media. A lot of people use Twitter and Facebook for this too. But that's given us access to a pool of candidates that was never thought possible before. We can literally communicate with someone across the globe with the click of a button. Also, websites like Your Indeed, Glassdoor, Career Builder, they've been around for some time, but they're constantly evolving and help recruiting the recruiting experience become easier to navigate. As far as engaging talent and interviewing talent, we're no longer tied or held to phone or on-site meetings. Platforms like Zoom, Teams, and WebEx have been around for some time, but especially over the last 2 years, they've become the norm for interacting in a corporate environment, which includes talent acquisition. This has allowed remote work to become more viable than ever. Another substantial change in talent acquisition over the last decade has been the new generation of the workforce. 10, 20, even 30 years ago, it was almost written in stone that if you find a job, you work hard at it, you grow within it, you work 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and maybe, just maybe, a new opportunity comes across your desk or, you know, something that you saw in the paper, or a friend and a family member works at another company close by that has an opening. The new generation, we can call it the millennial generation, can now get on their cell phones and find 10 new jobs they're hiring and looking for their experience, and they can engage with the touch of their thumb. It makes it a lot easier and opens it up to a lot more different things that hasn't been out there possible in the past. That same generation has come to know the flexible work schedule. 9 to 5 is still very common, but many companies that we're speaking with have their core hours and allow flexibility on start and stop time. The mind frame is almost as long as you get your work done on time and do it efficiently, do it when you're able to. We're also seeing core meeting hours. For example, I'm working with a company right now that holds meetings only between 8:30 and 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday, nothing else. And that's in an effort to really maximize productivity and capitalize on time management. Another change that I'll mention is that we've seen this occur since the pandemic is the increased need of specialized recruiting support due to a skill shortage. Times have changed and jobs aren't very generalized. I don't think they ever really were in a sense, but now more than ever, we're seeing and hearing from companies who don't know enough about the grand scale of learning and development to find what they require on their own.
Brian, how have you seen this change since COVID?
Yeah, I've seen it good and bad, I would say. From the pandemic, there are a lot of clients that adapted very well to the pandemic. And then there was some clients that didn't know how to adapt to the pandemic. And that was a fun recruiting year. And I think that it was more of a conversation in educating the clients on what we do and finding specialized candidates for our clients or just their needs. And it's a little bit different now because I think a lot of candidates look at the quality of life now, right? With the pandemic, I think a lot of people are really into their health now and they understand that they don't want to be in a stressful job and there's other things out there. And I think that the biggest thing out there right now would be a lot of jobs are remote. So a lot of folks have options. They could, if they're located in Florida, they could work in the West Coast or any time zone, to be honest. And there's a lot of flexibility out there right now. So candidates do have a lot of options. And that leads me to the next point where TA sometimes doesn't understand that candidates have other options on the table, not just theirs. And that's something that we have to understand, that the market is the market. It's going to move. And the fact that there are more remote jobs out there, it's going to be even more competitive. The TA departments that adapt to it, that can put some urgency on it, that can understand the market and understand we need to add the talent. That's where it is. It's the conversation of adapting through this. There's a lot of companies that have, and there's a lot of companies that haven't. You're going to see, probably have already, the great resignation. And that is something that's well known right now in TA and HR and things like that. That's a popular term now. And that's because candidates have options. People are unfortunately leaving for different roles, maybe trying new things and have other options where maybe 4 or 5 years ago, they didn't have that option to do that. So I think it's one of those things that companies are adapting to, but just kind of guide them in the right direction.
It's interesting, a couple of the points that you both brought up, because I think it comes down to really the general overarching change that's happened right now is really in kind of the candidate's hands. Like, it's in the job seeker's hands right now. And the power that that position gives you is, you know, gives you the ability to decide what is important. It's no longer necessarily the salary all the time. It's about what they're doing in their job that makes them happy, that makes them feel fulfilled, that gives them like great mental health and self-awareness, right? So I'm seeing more and more as a recruiter, and the job descriptions that people are providing, some of the call outs are more about the flexibility of the schedule, the time off that you're provided, the opportunities that you have to seek out more because of a remote or a hybrid schedule. So yeah, you're seeing a lot of different trends in what really is supposed to attract a candidate, and some organizations start to kind of change how they market their openings because of it. So yeah, I'm seeing a lot of what you guys talk about just even on LinkedIn in general, and how people are marketing their spaces.
Yes, that is all very interesting. And from an employer point of view, I can see why. And I certainly have changed my thinking on remote work over the last decade, and especially over the last few years, because I have seen that people have achieved a lot of incredible results working remotely, especially when COVID hit. We all basically went remote overnight and we became more innovative. I think we became more efficient. We were definitely more efficient in the meetings that we had. So it, as much as it's been a horrible thing, it has really helped organizations take a step back and realize, okay, we can do this, we can get our work done, and realize that it is so, like, I've always felt it was very important to create a work and life balance, but this even has brought it to a deeper level, right? Knowing that, okay, we can still get the work done. And also another important thing for me too is culture is so important. So I always have felt like, okay, if we have employees working a lot remotely, then how do you build that culture? And I could see when you're talking to a lot of these decision makers or talent acquisition managers, Brian and Steve, that could be sometimes an issue, that people are not necessarily concerned about whether the person is working or not, but it's like, how do you manage? How do you keep your culture intact when you have the remote environment?
The engagement, right? Yeah.
Right. I wanted to add one thing too, is that Steve and I have been working together for a long time, and we've actually seen the shift in the candidates, just like that. Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Is like just their demeanor, right? They're just happier. They just seem like they're just more passionate about what they do. They're in a position, maybe not making the money they want, but they're on a team that they love. They're collaborating. They have a hybrid or a remote shift that works for their schedule. There's a lot of things here that make the industry growing in a good positive light, because we have clients, like most of our clients are remote right now, and they give the option to the candidates, like, you can come into the office if you want, or if you want to stay home. So having that option, I think, is a really good option for candidates, because if they're a little cabin fever, they want to go to the office for a few days and, you know, collaborate and see some folks and do some work in the office, they're able to do that. They have the option. And it's a trust. You want to trust your employees. So even if they're in the office or out, you want to be able to trust.
Steve, what would you say some of the challenges are that clients face when they're searching for candidates? Is there like a trend? Are there things that you guys hear repeatedly? What sort of insight can you give us there?
As far as trends, I'll try to limit to like five or six, but there can always be challenges, but just it depends on the business goals of the individual hire, or the expectations of the hiring manager, their current process, urgency, just to name a few. I would even say actual urgency, because I think that there's a difference between urgency and actual urgency. Some of the more common challenges we encounter are having a long, drawn out interview process with multiple rounds that can be consolidated. Good candidates, they're getting snatched up by another role that's equally appealing, but's able to pull the trigger and make an offer sooner. Another challenge could be looking for one person to do the job of three or four different types of skill sets. We saw this a lot during and post-pandemic, when internal resources were there was the great layoff, if you will. Budgets were cut and people had to be laid off. And there was a lot of work that had to be done, but the continuity of the business was still there to focus on. So the budget may have been not in a place where they could bring on three people. So they were looking for one person to do all of these different things, where a few years ago, they'd be able to hire three or four people to do those requirements. Another challenge would be not being set on exactly what the responsibilities will be, or not getting the input of another major stakeholder that has an important say in the hire. This is a question that Brian and I are always asking early on in the process. There's been times when we got to the second or third round interview and unknown stakeholder became involved that brought up technical non-negotiables that weren't discussed beforehand or were brought to our attention beforehand. Makes it very difficult when you're on that third round interview and you're getting all this positive feedback from the team, and then someone comes in and says, no, we need them to do X, Y, Z instead, and this person doesn't have that. Another one that can be common, because everybody gets busy, is just being too busy to hire someone. And what I mean by that is not being able to respond with timely feedback or schedule interviews. Very, very easy to become inundated with work and your daily schedule to fill up. Then there's responsibilities outside of work. It adds up for everyone. I mean, I don't think there's really any exception for that. However, if you're truly in need to add someone to your team and it's a priority, you really have to manage your time and make time to operate through that hiring process, especially if making that hire is going to allow you to get some time back. If this person's going to be offloading some of the work that you're stuck doing right now. Another one that we see is not being confident in the selling points of the position or company. We always ask kind of what the sizzle is, why work for ABC company as opposed to this other company. If they can't really sell why they like working in that environment, why they like that culture, it doesn't translate well to candidates who are weighing multiple opportunities at once. And then the last one I'll mention that comes to mind is not being competitive with the market or willing to adapt to it. This can be in the case of base salary, aspects of total compensation, flexibility in certain areas, and just being confident why your company is a good place to work.
Those are all great points. I like what you said about not being confident in the selling points of the position in the company and not having the sizzle. How often does that happen? And you speak to clients and they're not able to explain why a candidate should choose their position versus another.
I wouldn't say that it happens very often, but there are times when, I mean, someone has to make a hire. And again, they're inundated, they're busy, and we're asking these qualifying questions. They ask, do you have the job description in front of you? We certainly do. But in our experience, the job description tells about 50% of that story. And that may be embellishing. The job description doesn't talk about what the team likes to collaborate with, what the culture is. Do you want somebody to kind of put their nose to the grindstone and do work? Do you want somebody kind of floating around the office and being very collaborative in other aspects as in regards to the culture that you're looking to retain and implement within an organization.
Something that I'm seeing a little bit of too, in regards to kind of like the selling points of working for a particular place, because that is what it comes down to sometimes, is candidates asking for internal references. So the hiring manager will ask the candidate for their own references to prove their quality of work and experience. But I've actually had a couple of people ask for, it'd be great to talk to somebody who's been on this project or has worked in a similar role and see how they feel about it and if it's the right fit for me. Like, are you seeing things like that too, where they almost can't provide that because it's so new and almost out of the box thinking for candidates to approach things in that way? I guess either one of you could answer that, but.
Well, no, it's a good question because we have run into that, but we've also, just thinking of internal references and stuff like that, say if an offer is on the table and they want to bring somebody in, a lot of the times what we're seeing right now is they certainly need a direct report, a manager that you've worked with, to learn how you've, you know, worked under that person, how you kind of exercise your responsibilities within that company. But equally as important, they like to see kind of peer references. What was this person like to work with, to collaborate with, all of that. So it's a good point to bring up. The people in the past, and I'm probably dating myself by saying going back to the 10 years ago, a decade ago, they wanted to see like your past three managers for references, and that was it, which could make it difficult. Some companies close down. Some managers are, you know, unreachable. So what we see that's a common ask for us is finding resumes of at least one or two direct managers or reports, could even be a supervisor, but also some peer references of folks that are working adjacent to you.
Brian, what about like on the client side of, or the candidate side of things, I guess there, do candidates ask clients for references too?
So I've actually wanted to go back to like the topic you brought up about the recruitment, about like going into and having a conversation with someone that's an employee at that company. I've never ran into that, but that actually sounds awesome. I really like that because you really will get the not the manager view, right? You're going to get someone that's going to say, hey, this place is great. You're going to love it here. I have an example that happened this morning where we had a candidate who was, she was a teacher transitioning into L&D, and she was just lacking a lot of it, but she was just so motivated and passionate and wanted just to get her foot in the door. The manager offered her, why don't you come in on Friday and do a shadowing session? Like, so she's going to go in and just do a shadowing session just to see what it's about, right? Like, it just, she doesn't know what to expect, and hey, this is the environment. And that was something that I thought that was really cool. The candidate was awesome about it. Like they were just, both partnerships were great. They were just like, we talked about it. She's going to come in. We're going to have a few hours of conversation, see how she likes it. And then if she's more interested, let's bring her in and have her interview with a manager. So I thought that was really cool to have a manager bring that up, because that was the first time in my 10-year experience a manager has done that.
Right. It's like a living version of that reference is like, well, why don't you come on in and see for yourself, right? And I can appreciate that somebody is quick enough on the draw to do that and just appreciates what their company can provide so much that they're like, you know what? The best way to find this out is to give us a couple hours together and see what day one might look like. I think that's very cool too.
I also think of like the hiring manager, right? Like, who doesn't want to work for that person? Like, that person is invested into growth and wants to build and grow a learning development team to the max, give other opportunities if it's in a different department or learn a new skill set. I mean, she's going out and being proactive about this. Like, she could have just said, hey, unfortunately, you're not a good fit. Why don't you come back in a few years when you have experience? But, you know, she understands the market. She understands this person is motivated. They're going to be very passionate about what they do. They're going to grind it every day because they want to prove to them that I can work in this L&D corporate environment.
I think that's awesome. Very cool. Kudos to the client.
It's definitely a great example of saying that there's always more to a resume, because I know some of our best employees did not come from a learning and development background. It was more of what they could bring as far as having a positive attitude, a growth mindset, and just being able to collaborate and working well with the team, having more of the creative mindset, but there is a lot more. So that's a good example, Brian. So Brian, what are some of the challenges that a candidate faces when searching for a new position that you see?
Yeah, so it's very competitive right now, right out there, because again, remote jobs, you can kind of search basically a whole United States now instead of just one region. So first, I would say LinkedIn is pretty heavy right now. I mean, I think a lot of the candidates will apply for jobs and they'll see over 150, 200 applicants that have already applied. The job's been open for 2 days, right? So that's pretty frustrating. One of the solutions that I have is take LinkedIn and make connections and start joining groups. And for an example, we had joined a teacher's transition into learning and development. And a lot of those teachers are just reading articles, joining webinars, just adding things to their resume and their arsenal where they can use that when they, during an interview, or they can add that on their LinkedIn. They're going to meet a lot of new people being active and just waiting on an application, right? So, oh, is this person going to get back to me or not? Then I think it's just using your connections and your referrals is probably the biggest thing to do right now. Who do you know that's working in an industry that you like? Talk to them. Do you know anyone that's open, have openings, or do you know anybody that could help me out? It's all about the referrals and connections these days, because you just never know who you're going to talk with, or you might be in line somewhere and you meet somebody who's a CEO of a company, and next thing you know it, you're working there. So just try to network, try to be active. Don't just sit and apply. It's all about connections, and there's a lot of different avenues now to apply for jobs, but you want to be able to be active, because you never know who's going to be looking at your LinkedIn or anything like that.
How could a candidate stand out?
Yeah. I mean, I would just make sure their resume would be tailored to the role. I think there's a lot of candidates that have one generic resume, which is fine, but when you're going to be competing for a role, you want to make sure you tailor your resume to that role. And just think about little keywords, right? So if it's just a technician or something like that, make sure you have technician all over the resume. If you don't have technician on your resume, they're not going to understand. Now, which brings me to the next point, is I think we really have a hard time in this market with technical recruiters that aren't able to source in this space or be able to read a resume correctly when it comes down to this space. Because we've been in conversations where TAs rejected candidates due to the fact that they didn't have an L&D background, but they were in an L&D for 10 years. So they sort of couldn't understand it. We had to influence and push. So that's a side of it is a little difficult too, because as a corporate internal team gets first dibs and wants to find this candidate. But over time, a learning strategist is not everyone can do that, right? E-learning and all of that. Like, that's not just hey, hop on Monster or LinkedIn and type in e-learning. There's a lot more to it. And you want to do a deep dive. There's a lot of key terms on people's resumes they mean multiple things. You can have a design on there, all these tools, but you know, if the person that's looking at the resume and reading that resume doesn't understand what those tools are, they're just probably bypass it to the next person because they have 200 applicants. So to stand out, make sure that you just add your keywords, make the resume short and sweet too. Nobody likes 5-6 page resumes, and just make sure that it's formatted, it's clear, and then make sure you tell a story. You want to have your resume tell a story too about, wow, you look at this growth in this career this person's had. Wow, this person, you know, jumped to this company, has worked in this industry. People will look at that, definitely.
Okay, great.
And that's a good point, Brian, about the tailoring of resumes. It's not to the point where it's like, okay, we want to look attractive to this job, let's make it look like we're good at this job. No, we want to be very, very transparent with your background. But it's just a good point, because it's something that we see every day. For example, I think recently we saw someone who had the title of, let's call it, a people's manager / training, where training was 75 to 80% of their job. But just because of that one title, it looked like people's manager was 80% and the / trainer, that training piece, was a very small portion of it. So they were like, we're going to pass. It doesn't look, they're very focused on training. Come to find out after, you know, a deep screen and deep dive with us, that they are. So it's all about, you know, selling yourself to that particular opportunity based on your actual experience.
Yeah,
perception. The perception, right? Like, that's why even sometimes it's just rearranging things so that the specific call outs that a client has in mind based on who's the right fit for the role are almost like the first things that they read. So even like how you structure your resume is a strategy in itself. I've identified those things a couple times in working with contractors. It really is. If there's a lot of candidates, you're going to want to like hit them with the information quick. And you do that by putting it right at the top and making sure it's the first thing they hear.
And I just wanted to add one last thing to that was, if you were able to partner with a recruiter or some agency, pick their brains. I mean, they're the ones that are talking to these managers all day long. So for example, if you were to call, say I spoke to a candidate today of a role, I would tell them what the manager likes to see on the resume. Like, what is the manager like, right? You'll be able to tell them and guide them, not just, hey, go switch your resume up. You're able to actually help them with their resume and add a little bit more to it. Hey, you have a really good design background. You just only have like one paragraph. Like, let's add a few more paragraphs to that. It'll stand out a lot more.
Steve, you were talking earlier about technology and the hiring process and how it has dramatically changed over the process as a whole in the last 10 years. Seems like there's a lot of positives about it because there's a lot of outreach. It can be very quick. But what about the negatives? Are there challenges to the way that technology has changed the hiring process?
Great question. Just because it's clear that technology has its advantages, it's helped streamline communication, expand networks, help contain information, that list goes on. But also some issues that it causes. Always pros and cons. One of the cons that I would relate to direct placement or just talent acquisition altogether as a whole is kind of the impersonal nature of it. Now, there's plenty of professionals who can utilize technology efficiently while incorporating a personal touch with it. However, I've seen personally and have had clients complain about other experiences where someone they're working with, in this case, you know, a staffing agency, sales rep, or recruiter, where their presence is nothing but text coming through an email. No face-to-face interaction or verbal communication. And in a very tech-heavy corporate environment, some people almost hide behind it. And it's created, you know, kind of an impersonal, uncollaborative way of communicating. What's really going to set someone apart is exceptional customer service where a client can expect a quick response from you, especially in the days now of having your email directly on your phone at all times during the day, or for you to answer your cell phone or office phone or be able to have a face-to-face intake or update meetings. Another issue as far as technology is concerned that's come up over the last couple of years is virtual communication. There are so many different types of positives that come with having the ability to virtually communicate with people around the country or world, but we've all seen technical difficulties with Zooms or virtual platforms. At times, people are understanding, but if you're interviewing for a highly technical role, hiring managers expect you to know what you're doing. And if you don't, it almost kind of rules you out in those instances, whether it's poor connection or something. One thing that's pretty funny that actually comes to mind, which is hilarious to me, I'm not sure if you guys have seen it. It's the lawyer who had a virtual court meeting with a judge and his face filter was stuck as a cat. Yeah, and he had to, in confidence, tell the judge that he wasn't a cat. And he was like, yeah, I get it.
Like, this is so funny.
Sometimes it just happens. It's happened to a couple of people here where like they turn to the side and I'm like, what is that shadow hovering over your face? And they turn back and like the mustache filter has randomly been put on.
Steve, I just wanted to add one thing to what you mentioned too was TA will maybe just say we're not interested, right, in another candidate. And one of the things that we are really passionate about just in our team is just transparency. A lot of the candidates deserve feedback, right? We don't accept, hey, this person's not a fit after two rounds of interviews. We need to know specific feedback, even if it's negative. Like, tell us what the candidate did wrong or what we did wrong, because us or the candidate is going to learn from that. They want to be able to get that feedback and say, oh, okay, maybe I talked too much or whatever that was, but they are eager to get that feedback because they're all actively interviewing at other spots. So they're going to use that next time they interview. So we really appreciate the urgency and just the feedback, even if it's a no, but we really want to know why so we can let the candidates know.
Steve, what do you see from clients today as far as their expectations from candidates? Meaning, are they getting a little more strict? Are they easing up the requirements because it's hard to find the right people? Is college experience still important?
It really varies from company to company, and in some cases, position to position, individual to individual, whoever's involved with hiring. Everybody wants a top-tier candidate to come in and to be able to hit the ground running with all the critical requirements they have in front of them, whether a growth position or a backfill. I don't think that there is an all-encompassing yes or no to that question. It's case by case. But what I will say is that when a hiring manager or team does expect too much or too less, we, a staffing partner in this instance, are partnering with them. It's really up to us as experts in the industry and fields of work to provide the education piece of what's realistic and what's unrealistic. We've all seen the job descriptions that say master's degree highly preferred, pay rate of $18 an hour. The same goes for the requirement of a certain technology a company is using, where experience with a similar technology is sufficient. Years of experience come into play as well. For the most part, anybody with an opening has high expectations for the person that will fill the role, both technically and culturally. What it really comes down to is if the ideal candidate's different from the capable candidate and how you're able to bridge that gap. As far as college degrees, that's also a case-by-case basis. You know, we've seen instances where an employer cut a candidate loose because of a lack of a degree, and they went on to thrive and be promoted through an opportunity with a direct competitor. It also depends on skill set, obviously. For example, you're not going to hire someone to design the government's weapons if they've been a graphic designer for the past 10 years. You need a mechanical engineer. But we do see candidates who've been training facilitators who have progressed organically throughout their career, learned how to build training content, and landed a job as an instructional designer, for example, even though the job description called for a degree in instructional design. Very much important. A lot of hiring managers are more interested in seeing examples of your work experience, whether that's portfolios, PowerPoints, course outlines, and it's tangible proof that they've successfully completed similar projects, rather than seeing, okay, you have a degree in this, let's see what you've actually done proficiently throughout your career. Main factors in not only hiring someone, but wanting to interview them is technical experience, industry experience if applicable, confidence, how they present themselves. And during the interview process, you're also vetted for your cultural fit within the team. You know, are they looking for someone to put their head down to work, like I mentioned before, or are they looking for a highly collaborative person, someone who can speak intelligently with key stakeholders throughout the company? So not a direct answer, but it really is kind of a case-by-case basis, depending on the actual requirements of the position, the company itself, and the individual making the hire.
Brian, what would you say makes a good hiring manager? In your experience, what are some suggestions you could give to people maybe on what makes a good impression? What skills?
Communication is probably the first one. That's the biggest piece, right? Steve harped on that a lot before, with just communication is huge, because we're built up of urgency. So we're ready to go. We want to work things and we want to be able to help and partner as fast as we can, because we understand the urgency of how fast you need this candidate. But communication is huge, right? So if you partner with a manager and they get back to you when they say they're going to get back to you, you start developing a little bit of a trust factor there and just a relationship, right? So you're able to have tough conversations with those managers, able to provide them feedback of even like their interview process, if it's too long, if it's too short, whatever that is. But I think it's like a trust communication. I mean, feedback is huge too. If we're missing the mark somewhere, we just want to know, because we don't want to keep going down that path. We strive off of feedback. If a client said we're missing the mark, we want to know how we're missing that mark, and just communication, back to communication. So I would say that's the biggest piece to that. And then just someone else that understands the market.
Steve, why would anyone want to use an outside agency when your company already has an internal recruiting team?
Right now, specifically, just with a lot of budgets rebounding and a lot of hiring coming back into play, many of the new clients that we're supporting have too many openings for their internal team to handle. If they have a dozen different openings and they're being flooded with hundreds of applicants for each one, good candidates are undoubtedly going to slip through the cracks. At the same time, not every corporate talent acquisition professional can be an expert in a specific skill set. In our experience, we've had a lot of companies connect with us because they don't have the knowledge of identifying learning and development talent, whether a trainer or designer, something even more obscure and complex. This is where we save them a lot of time. The same can be said for the other agencies or full service solution organizations who focus in a specific area of expertise. For example, agencies that focus solely on healthcare or nursing or engineering. Outsourcing these searches, they can really help save so much time for the client. It takes transparent, clear communication upfront and learning as much as you can with an intake call to determine if a client wants you to take the oversight completely off of their plate, or if they kind of want you to act as an extension of their team. That's where the ability to be flexible is just so critical. We've had instances where we've taken the oversight off of the client and have scheduled all interviews while keeping weekly update meetings so everyone is on the same page. Brian and I have also had instances where the hiring manager, internal TA team, is in constant contact with us, or vice versa. We've been given a client email address and a desk on site if preferred. It really comes down to listening, being consultative, and offering options that correlate well to their business goals.
Very well said. So what advice do you have for hiring managers, otherwise known as TAs, talent acquisition managers, which I know you use that term, and I assume everybody who's listening understands it, because a few times when you said that, I didn't know if people were thinking it was TTA.
Right. And you just missed a letter. I thought it said the same thing. This guy works for them and doesn't even know what they're called.
So what advice would you give?
Well, this would be for both talent acquisition or TA and the hiring managers, because they're two separate entities that are working collaboratively together as well as with us. But as far as advice, I would just say, be aware of what you need. Give serious thought to the responsibilities of a new hire. Don't depend on old job description that's several years old in the D drive of your computer system. In instances where a hiring manager wasn't 100% sure of what they needed, we've teamed up with them to build their requirements along with them collaboratively. So don't be afraid to ask for help during that process. I would also just say, be human. It's easy to get wrapped up in the technical non-negotiables of a job spec, but it's also important to come off as someone who's approachable and fun to work with. As much as you want to find that capable person who you don't mind spending 40 hours a week with, the same goes for the candidate. And lastly, I'll say just be open-minded. Don't be stuck in your ways and listen to how other people view solving different types of problems.
I would certainly use you to help me find my next candidate, which I have before.
There you go. The proof is in the pudding, right?
There you go.
Oh, my goodness. Well, listen, great, gentlemen. Well, listen, it's been a lot of fun, and we're obviously very excited that you both joined us, but let's be a little bit different here at the end. I know that you guys have 20 years of combined experience, and with that is a lot of sunshines and rainbows and happy things, but what about some fun kind of nightmarish stories? Can you tell us about your time in TA? What do you got for us? Steve, we'll start with you.
Sure. So I have one that's pretty interesting that comes to mind. And we were working with a company who, God, I really have to dig back in the caverns of my mind. It might have been they were looking for like a mechanical designer. This is pre-TTA and looked like a good candidate, good opportunity. The candidate, however, came back to us and said, it sounds like a very interesting role. I'd be, you know, willing to do the work. However, the commute's a little bit long for me. Have you spoken to the company about them potentially moving their operations closer to me? And I mean, you want to be kind at all of these different times, but it's just difficult to be like, okay, so you want them to either own a building or lease it for several years, pick up, move down, you know, the highway, a couple of exits to cut your commute down. I'll see if that's doable.
Standing. So the salary is not negotiable, but I was wondering if the building relocation was, you know, that's something that you guys can do for me. Brian, go for it.
Okay. I got a doozy. So a few years back, we had a candidate that was interviewing for a manufacturing position. I was really, really technical. Went into his interview for an hour. He gives me a call back after, and he's like, yeah, the interview went great. I said, all right, great. I will reach out to the manager and get some feedback. Call the manager. The manager says, hey, Brian, he's a no. And I said, okay, can you give me some feedback? It's because he smelled like a skunk. And I was like, all right, well, that's kind of weird to really smell, but all right, maybe whatever. So then when I called the candidate to let him know they didn't get the job, he says, oh, was it because I got sprayed by the skunk? And I said, you're sprayed by a skunk. And he's like, yeah, like an hour before the interview. And I just didn't want to cancel. So I just went to it. So he got sprayed by a skunk an hour before the interview, went to the interview. I can't believe this manager spent an hour in the room with him. Like, oh my goodness. And that was one thing that I was just.
That is commitment.
Blown away by.
That is unbelievable.
I don't know how a manager could do that. So kudos to
so for real, right? Keeping the professional face on, outstanding. Oh, God.
And our producer is showing us a picture of Pepe Le Pew.
Pepe Le Pew. I can't. So funny.
Well, thank you so much, Steve and Brian. I was extremely impressed with your background and knowledge. So glad you're part of the team, and thank you for joining us today.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, guys. This is so much fun.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us.
It's about to get better because we have a fun little segment called the TTA 10 that we're going to hit you with.
It's the TTA 10, 10 final questions for our guest.
All right, fellas. So this is how it's going to work. I gave you a little bit of a debrief, but here's one more for you. We're going to take turns, okay? Brian, I'll have you go first, and then Steve, you'll go next. And we're going to rapid fire 10 questions. The whole thing is that it's fun and playful. Answer them as quickly and as honestly as you can. And at the end of the 10 questions, we're going to do a time check. And whoever has the fastest time, that's how we'll do it with these guys, is going to be the winner. And that winner gets, well, David will show you what you get at the end. So,
two more weeks off?
Oh, geez. Well, then I'm going to play instead. So... All right, Brian, you're my first guest. Are you ready?
Go for it.
All right. What's your favorite driving song?
Newfound Glory, My Friend's Over You.
What TV show do you always recommend for your friend's next binge?
Yellowstone.
Which of the seven dwarves do you most relate to?
I don't know all. I don't relate to any of them.
I find that hard to believe. What is 19 minus 6?
19 minus 6, 13?
What was your favorite subject in school?
High school or what kind of, where, college?
Pick one.
Gym?
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Who would you cast to play you in a movie about your life?
Leo.
Garden gnome, cute or creepy?
Cute. I have to.
Beachfront or mountainside?
Oh, that's beachfront.
If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
Read minds.
All right, let's clock the time, David. But don't give the results yet. We're going to make them wait till the end, okay? All right. Steve, it's your turn now, buddy. Are you ready?
Bring it on.
All right. Steve, what pandemic phrase would you like to officially retire?
New norm.
Which planet in our solar system is closest to the sun?
That would be Mercury.
What is your go-to karaoke song?
On the TTA website, Brown Eyed Women by the Grateful Dead, but I will also go with Black by Pearl Jam.
If you could have coffee with any living person, who would it be?
Any living person. Say Eddie Vedder.
What are Scooby-Doo's treats called?
Scooby snacks.
Pizza or tacos?
Can you repeat that?
Pizza or tacos?
Tacos.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would you choose?
Jackson Hole.
Which zoo animal would you most like to have as a pet?
Tiger.
What is your favorite movie?
Oh, there's so many, but if I had to pick right now, I'm just going to throw out Happy Gilmore.
The Kool-Aid man just burst through the wall. What does he say?
Oh, yeah.
And clock the time, David.
I could already tell that Brian was saying, that's not fair. My questions were harder.
Brian, half of yours were either or, so I want to hear it.
The results are in. Steve clocks in with a time of 1 minute and 9 seconds. Congratulations, Steve.
Thank you.
Was it enough to top Brian? Well, Brian clocks in with a score of... 1 minute and 17 seconds, making Steve our champion.
This is why I came here to do this.
Steve, you are a TTA 10 champion. You may shout this news from the rooftops, amaze your friends, and include it on your resume. Now that you've achieved this coveted honor, you will be respected and loved by captains of industry, heads of state, and TikTok influencers. The sun will shine brighter for you, food will taste better, and life will have new meaning. Congratulations, Steve. You are a TTA champion. Yes.
Thank you, David.
We have something for Brian also.
Shane.
Brian, you have failed in your quest to complete the TTA 10. Our deepest sympathies to you in the hopes that you can someday move past this profound humiliation. We still respect you, Brian, just not nearly as much as we did before. Really, in a way, we're all winners today. But in a more accurate way, you are not a winner. Just remember, tomorrow's another day, and who knows, it might not be as bad as this one. Godspeed to you, friend, Brian.
Dang.
And we thank you for participating and being a good sport for the TTA 10.
See, I feel very bad because Brian did do it within the 90 seconds.
He did.
He did.
So if you were on this episode alone, Brian, you would have won.
Next, you got the prep.
I know.
He got great questions.
Those are different ones, though.
I'm so happy.
There's just no math
question. I have my calculator up over here just in case you fire math. Because I'm like, oh my God, I don't know.
That's so funny. I
gave the math question to you. That one.
Thank you so much, guys. This was so much fun. And it was so great to hear your stories and how you can help companies in their talent acquisition needs.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to be here.
For more information on TTA's direct hire division, visit us at thetrainingassociates.com. We'll see you later.